Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 12, Episode 3, The Kansei Reforms. In the previous episode, we examined the growing unrest which was still in its infancy during the latter 1700s. Those who partook in the frequent agrarian riots did not yet perceive any common cause with disillusioned samurai who believed that imperial restoration would solve all national problems. It may have been only a matter of time, however, before the shogunate became enough of a common enemy for its various opponents to put aside their differences with each other. That being said, Tokugawa Ienari had a remarkable opportunity before him when he ascended the shogunal throne in 1787. The Great Tenmei Famine, which began in 1783, was still ongoing, but Tanuma Okitsugu had been removed from office and served as a magnificent scapegoat for all of the problems which had plagued the closing years of Tokugawa Ieyasu. Why was the nation beset by natural disasters, pestilence, and famine? It's probably the fault of the guy who's been taking all the bribes. The truth, of course, is that Tanuma Okitsugu was not just another self-enriching corrupt official, but is recognized today as a fairly competent administrator. The natural disasters and market forces which had spawned the Great Tenmei Famine did not have simple, straightforward solutions, and Okitsugu did not spare any official expense in trying to mitigate the intense wave of human misery that was washing over the land, especially in the north. What this meant for his successors, however, was that the national treasury was nearly depleted. While the shogunate often imposed expenses on Tozama daimyo nationwide as a means to drain their finances, they were not immune from the occasional shortfall. Around the country, expenditure was up and revenue was down, which meant that the bakufu was drifting dangerously close to taking on debt. Tokugawa Ienari was inheriting a nation which in many ways was broken and bleeding, and the beginning of his reign was marked by dark portents of its own. In 1788, less than a year after he was elevated to shogun, there were riots targeting rice dealers in Edo and Osaka, and then in the spring of that year, a fire erupted in Kyoto that raged for 3 days and burned much of the city to the ground, completely destroying the imperial palace. The imperial court managed to escape the conflagration, but the psychological effects nationwide was devastating. No new construction was allowed in Kyoto until the imperial palace had first been rebuilt. Before we get too much further into the weeds, it's important to paint a clear portrait of the new shogun and the man who was to become his chief minister. Tokugawa Ienari was born in 1773 and was around 14 years old when he was made shogun in 1787. Tokugawa Ieyasu had no natural children of his own and had adopted Ienari from the Hitotsubashi branch of the Tokugawa clan at a young age. He was a great-grandson of Yoshimune. The succession in the wake of Ieyasu's death was heated, but eventually the three Tokugawa houses gave their approval given Ieyasu's adoption of Ienari. The man who had championed Ienari's succession was a daimyo named Matsudaira Sadanobu. As you can probably discern from his family name, Matsudaira Sadanobu was indeed a cousin of the new shogun Ienari. In fact, he may have harbored some hope of becoming the shogun himself one day, given his natural lineage. Although he had been adopted in 1776 at the age of 17 by the Matsudaira clan of Shirakawa Domain, he was born into the Tayasu branch of the Tokugawa family. In fact, the Tayasu Tokugawa family had objected to his forced adoption into the Shirakawa Matsudaira clan, but the adoption was forced through at the direction of Tanuma Okitsugu, who also rejected Sadanobu's own petition to be allowed to return to his birth family. In spite of his misgivings, Matsudaira Sadanobu took over as daimyo of Shirakawa Han, which is located in southern Mutsu, in 1783 when his adopted father died. This was the same year in which the Great Tenmei Famine really began to start devastating the nation, and the domain's economy was already in terrible shape even before the massive food shortage. However, Sadanobu rose to the challenge and managed to succeed in bringing a large quantity of rice to Shirakawa and ensure that the people therein were provided with food during that difficult time. In a moment when so many throughout Mutsu province especially were starving to death, records claim that not a single death in Shirakawa Han was due to hunger. Being a Neo-Confucian true believer, he worked tirelessly to improve Shirakawa domain and set it on a path to prosperity. In the wake of Ieyasu's death, Tanuma Okitsugu and some of his allies within the Bakufu tried to prevent the elevation of young Ienari, but they could not agree on a candidate and were too busy arguing amongst themselves to prevent the adopted young man from succeeding the throne with Sadanobu's support. Soon afterward, Sadanobu joined the Roju, or Council of Elders, and proposed a sweeping set of reforms which was meant to undo the supposed damage which Tanuma Okitsugu had done, end the famine which was still ravaging the populace, and bring the Bakufu's finances back into good order. This was effectively resisted at first by Tanuma Okitsugu's leftover allies who still served the shogunate, but the aforementioned rice market riots of early 1788 soon convinced them that a great change was needed. Sadanobu formed a select committee and introduced a suite of measures which came to be known as the Kansei Reforms, named for the Kansei Imperial Era in which they were enacted. Chief among the issues they tackled was getting Bakufu expenditures under control, promoting qualified candidates to serve the shogunate, dismissing unqualified office holders who had likely bribed their way into office, and eliminating the open corruption encouraged by Tanuma Okitsugu. Subsequent investigations condemned a number of officials who had been partisans of Okitsugu and who had, like him, been lining their pockets while on the job. This amounted to something like a purge against Okitsugu's partisans, as those found guilty were sentenced to death or banishment. Such actions extended to the private sector, as Okitsugu's merchant enablers as well as the profiteering rice brokers were also punished, albeit usually with disqualification for holding office or doing future business with the Bakufu. One of the most striking contrasts between his leadership style and that of Tanuma Okitsugu was Matsudaira Sadanobu's tendency to consult with relevant office holders regarding his policy proposals, rather than using said office holders as mere enforcers and governing roughly by fiat, as Okitsugu had done. Although he probably had a specific agenda during those consultations, his ability to steer the relevant officials toward agreement with his ideas is certainly noteworthy. Another marked difference between them was that Sadanobu resolutely refused to debase the national currency in order to balance the Bakufu's books. While debasement was utilized heavily by Yoshimune and Okitsugu, Sadanobu insisted on balancing revenues and expenditures, partly through dismissing expendable members of the shogunate and partly through elimination of the corruption which had run rampant under Okitsugu's watch. The Kansei reforms began in 1788, but it wasn't until 1793, 5 years into the effort, that revenues slightly outpaced expenditure. During those 5 years, the shogunate took loans from moneylenders which allowed them to continue reconstructive efforts in Kyoto, which still had many years of recovery after the Great Fire of 1788. Because of the anti-Okitsugu tendencies of Sadanobu's administration, the impending plans which the former had made to develop the island of Ezo, which is modern-day Hokkaido, into a large Japanese colony were shut down. While Okitsugu had arranged for the Bakufu to seize the land of the Matsumae clan, who had formerly governed trade between the Yamato Japanese and the Ainu people, Sadanobu restored their domain. This came as a great disappointment to those whom Okitsugu had been promising slices of that sweet, sweet Hokkaido land, but restoring and fortifying Sakoku was the new status quo, and Sadanobu intended to enforce it. Questions had already arisen during the former administration about Japan's capabilities for self-defense. One of the side effects of the Rampeki Dutch craze was that military-minded samurai, like those who taught at the sword schools, became more acutely aware of developments in gunpowder weaponry in Europe. Many of them raised concerns, by no means illegitimate, that Japan would be unable to defend itself in the event of a war with a foreign power who possessed such superior technology. In response to these concerns, Matsudaira Sadanobu ordered the formation of a gunnery school in Nagasaki in 1791, as well as a sister school in Edo the following year. In 1792, Sadanobu also faced a diplomatic crisis in which Sakoku was violated. The Russian Empire was once again determined to make inroads into Japanese trade partnership, one way or another. Rather than sending an openly hostile mission to force Japan to open its borders to trade, the representatives of Russia used a pretense of returning two Japanese castaways to their home country. The unfortunate exiles had been crewmen on a ship which was caught in a storm off southern Honshu in 1782 and blown far out to sea. They made their way to the island of Amchitka, which was Russian territory. They gradually made their way to the Russian mainland, and their leader, Daikoku Kodayu, enjoyed an audience with Catherine the Great, the sovereign of the Russian Empire. 10 years later, Kodayu and his remaining crew returned to Japan, guiding their Russian hosts to Ezo. The leader of this Russian mission was one Adam Laxman, a Swedish-speaking Finn whose father Erik Laxman, a natural scientist who had performed extensive studies on the animal life of Siberia, had masterminded this mission. In fact, the senior Laxman had sent letters along with his son in hopes of establishing correspondence with Japanese scholars, but it is not known whether those letters were ever delivered. In October of 1792, the Russian ship Yekaterina, named after the Empress, arrived on Ezo and was promptly greeted by a contingent of samurai from the Matsumai clan. Laxman and his crew were treated hospitably, but his hosts balked at the insistence that he be allowed to travel onward to Edo to deliver the castaways directly. News of this encroachment soon reached the Bakufu, and Matsudaira Sadanobu sent two envoys with a 500-warrior escort to talk things over with these uninvited guests. Meanwhile, the Matsumai clan permitted Laxman to sail his ship to Hakodate, a large harbor town on Ezo, where they awaited the shogunate's representatives. Judging from the expediency of the ensuing negotiations, the Bakufu's envoys wanted to conclude this business as quickly as possible and send the foreigners on their way. The Russians were given special privileges. Specifically, they were exempted from the customary practices of bowing and kneeling before the shogunate's representatives. As a gesture of goodwill, the Bakufu had armed the welcoming committee with gifts of 3 swords and 100 bags of rice. They politely informed the captain that foreign ships visiting Japan were forbidden from landing anywhere besides Nagasaki, and even then, only by permission. Because he was attempting to repatriate castaways, they assured him that he and his crew would not be punished for this encroachment, but nevertheless should depart at once. However, Laxman insisted that he had been ordered by his sovereign to conclude a trade agreement and refused to leave until said agreement was finalized. Ultimately, the shogunate envoys grudgingly accepted an extremely limited trade agreement with the Russian Empire. Russia was permitted to send one trade ship to Nagasaki, but sternly warned that Christianity was not tolerated. While this wasn't exactly the multi-year, semi-permanent arrangement which Laxman had been hoping for, it was better than nothing. He returned to Russia with the first new trade agreement between the Japanese and a foreign power since the 1600s. 9 years later, a Russian ship would attempt to enter Nagasaki Harbor to honor this single-use trade agreement, but Bakufu officials there would politely but firmly order them to depart because Japan was closed to foreign trade. This particular incident convinced the Russian Empire to give up on trade with Japan, at least through official government channels. During the ensuing years between Laxman's visit and the arrival of the Russian trade ship, Sadanobu ordered renovation and strengthening of the coastal defenses. He would continue throughout his tenure as de facto head of state to pursue a more assertive defense policy. Sadanobu continued throughout the 1790s to curtail the powers of the rice brokers who so frequently impoverished the samurai class. He set strict limits on loan interest and warned moneylenders that they would be severely punished if they overcharged. Attempts to corner the rice market, which would inevitably drive prices up, were curtailed through legal coercion. However, the shogunate's hatamoto, or retainers, perceived these new limitations as a form of permission, and in 1795 they led a violent reprisal against moneylenders in Edo, in which several merchant houses were assaulted and debt records destroyed. The offenders were punished, but Sadanobu continued to chip away at the influence of the emerging proto-capitalists of the late 1700s by trying to shore up Japan's older economic engine of food-producing land. He placed government supervisors to watch over the activities of rice brokers nationwide, especially the large brokers who operated out of Osaka. He enforced fixed-price schemes to keep food prices reasonable and ordered daimyo nationwide to store 50 koku of rice for every 10,000 koku their domains produced. This served as surplus food during times of meager harvest and helped to prevent famines. Sadanobu was convinced that an imbalance between production and consumption was to blame for the unstable prices of the rice market, so he adopted back-to-the-land policies, which encouraged peasants to abandon urban areas like Edo for farming villages. However, these rules were difficult to enforce, and ultimately these official edicts were considered toothless. Regarding the imperial court, Sadanobu at first helped thaw the previously chilly relations between the emperor's ceremonial government and the Bakufu. We discussed in previous episodes how the latter part of the 1700s witnessed a few notable incidents involving imperial restorationists who were punished by the shogunate. Some of Emperor Momozono's close Kuge friends had been caught up in the purges and exiles that followed, which had embittered the court against the shogunate. Sitting Emperor Kokaku, however, took the opportunity to grant Sadanobu an audience and receive him courteously when he came to Kyoto in 1778. Efforts were underway to rebuild a portion of the city which had been destroyed by fire the previous year, and Sadanobu had exposed embezzlement from local Bakufu officials who were punished for lining their pockets with funds meant for reconstruction. However, this era of good feelings did not last for long. Emperor Kokaku petitioned the Bakufu to grant the title of Daijo Tenno, meaning abdicated emperor, to his father, Prince Sukehito. As you may have noticed from his title, Kokaku Tenno's father was not an emperor at all, but granting imperial titles to emperors' fathers who had not themselves served as Tenno was not at all uncommon. Sadanobu himself, however, personally argued against granting this title, which made the court rethink their previous assessment of the Bakufu's chief administrator. Part of the reason for Sadanobu's reluctance was probably Emperor Kokaku's tendency to involve the imperial court in the realm of secular matters, which was supposed to be the Bakufu's domain. Having been adopted by former Emperor Go Momozono just before he died, Kokaku Tenno was elevated in 1779, just a few years before the great Tenmei famine ravaged the land. During that terrible famine, Emperor Kokaku ordered the imperial court to organize its own famine relief, which was seen by some in the shogunate as an attempt to draw attention to the Bakufu's ineffectiveness as the famine worsened. He also revived some defunct ceremonies and ordered his own research into the nation's currency as well as the currencies of China and Europe. While none of this amounts to actual political power, an emperor with such a driving curiosity about the world around him could be a threat to the Bakufu, who claimed to act in his name. Eventually, the shogunate agreed to give his father the title of retired emperor instead of abdicated emperor. This compromise satisfied the court, but the rift caused by this incident would only grow larger in time. Emperor Kokaku continued to keep abreast of national developments and followed the incident with the Russian landing at Ezo with great interest. This fresh burst of activity from the imperial court was watched closely by the Bakufu, but Emperor Kokaku was careful not to overstep too far. Matsudaira Sadanobu's policy pushes were largely based on his Neo-Confucian worldview, and nowhere was this made clearer than the policies he put in place at Yushimasedo, Edo's principal university. Yushimasedo had fallen victim to misadministration during the years of Tanuma Okitsugu, and Sadanobu made it his mission to restore it as primarily a Neo-Confucian school which closely followed the teachings of Chuji. Layoffs and dismissals ensued, and a cousin of Sadanobu, a fellow Matsudaira, was put in charge of the school. A strict curriculum was enforced, and subjects which did not pertain to Neo-Confucian philosophy or governance were excised. While it's true that academic freedom was obviously not on Sadanobu's list of values, it is worth noting that the scholars who objected to this university reform and organized protests to make themselves heard were not subjected to any punishments or reprisals. However, Sadanobu's Neo-Confucian adherence extended far beyond university policy into the rather unwelcome realm of public morals. Starting in 1790, he issued broad sweeping bans on the printing of pornography and publishing works that criticized the government. At first, those found guilty of violating this ban were the predictable crop of racy novelists, but in 1791, a scholar named Hayashi Shihei was punished after he published a book about naval defense. This work was seen as being overly alarming and thus likely to cause panic. But the following year, Adam Laxmon showed up in Ezo, which led the shogunate to reconsider Shihei's work and even take some of its advice to heart. It is not an uncommon historical phenomenon for reformers to become unpopular among the society they seek to reform, and certainly Sadanobu is no exception. As Shogun Ienari grew older, he expected to take a more active role in governance or, at the very least, be consulted once in a while. He grew so irritated with Sadanobu excluding him from his work that he once asked a subordinate if he could borrow his sword so that he could strike Sadanobu down for impertinence. The common people were also not crazy about the Kansei reforms, or the man who promoted them. The Chōnin merchants were unhappy with his interference in their business, and the broader middle class disliked his censorship. The working class disliked his attempts to get them out of cities where they had some measure of control over their employment and situation for the sake of rural villages where a lifetime of back-breaking farm labor awaited them. The commoners created clever songs which mocked the de facto head of state and even seemed to pine for a return to the policies of Tanuma Okitsugu. The Japanese wordplay involved was usually some variation on saying that one preferred Numa, which means muddy pond, which was a reference to Tanuma Okitsugu, rather than the Shirakawa, which means clear stream, and is a reference to Sadanobu, who was the daimyo of Shirakawa Han. To make matters worse, the Kansei reforms, simply put, largely did not work. Although the initial years of Kansei were far more prosperous than the years which preceded them, it was not terribly difficult to compete with the Great Tenmei Famine in terms of prosperity. Fundamentally, the reforms championed by Sadanobu were conservative in nature and amounted to an attempt to return to a previous era. While the Bakufu's treasury was refilled and largely held steady, the economy was still chaotic in spite of the shogunate's price controls, and production plummeted as rural farm workers sought more prosperous lives in urban centers. In 1812, matters came to a head, and Matsudaira Sadanobu was dismissed from office thanks to the combined efforts of his political enemies in the Bakufu and the shogun Tokugawa Ienari. He returned to Shirakawa domain and contented himself with its administration, but later requested to be moved to Kuwana domain in Ise province, southeastern Kansai. He lived out his days and never returned to power, finally dying in 1829 after a protracted sickness. It was revealed sometime after his death that he was the author of a satire called Daimyo Katagi, which portrayed a parody version of the daimyo lifestyle. Works of this nature would have, of course, been banned by his own policies, and I will admit the fact that he wrote what amounted to an illegal text endears him to me a little bit. Next time, we will continue our discussion of the reign of Tokugawa Ienari, the longest reigning Tokugawa shogun, as his bakufu continues grappling with the problems facing the Japanese people, a task for which they appear to have been hopelessly outmatched. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.